afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Guest today is poker player and dealer Terry King. Terry won a World Series of Poker bracelet almost 40 years ago and was a girlfriend at Chip Reese for 5 or 6 years. She has lots of good stories. Terry King, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we get to Terry, Richard, I heard a story that you were recently busted in a casino, not by the pit, but by an advantage player. And what you were busted for is actually playing Pokemon Go. Please, say this so.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that you've outed me internationally here on the radio, it's true. I was playing Pokemon Go in a casino. I know your question is why was I playing the game? I found that it's just something that gives me something to talk with my kids about. I found it good because it does actually encourage people to get out and walk. So, which for one of my sons in particular, that was a great thing to get him out doing that. So, I just wanted to see what all the hullabaloo was about. So, yeah, I was doing it. It's true. I'm embarrassed.
So there's an advantage play there somewhere. We haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, right. So, have to figure out a way to play the game for money or something.
When you go off and play the secret game, is it Pokemon Go?
No.
Oh.
No, I haven't found a way to make any money at that yet.
All right, let's talk to Terry. Terry, you started playing poker in the early 70s. How did that all come about?
Well, I graduated from high school and at 18 was planning to go to college, wasn't real keen on it, and found myself going off to Vegas, literally off the farm, to visit a boyfriend's aunt that lived there. She played poker, five-card draw, quarter ante, 1 to 5, open on anything. She wasn't that great a player, but I started playing with her and eventually got check raised by who's now been my best friend for 40-some years. I almost started crying. But she and her husband, Natalie and Ron Raggi, started teaching me how to play better. And eventually I quit my legal secretary job. I had turned down the FBI for a job. And I think that's probably good. And just started playing poker for a living. I was 18. I couldn't work in a casino for several years, so I just would sneak in and play, and nobody ever seemed to have a problem with that, and they didn't ID people back then.
So they were still dealing five-card draw in Las Vegas back then.
Yeah, thank you for pointing out how old I am.
Well, that couldn't have lasted long. I got here in 77.
You're correct.
Yeah.
I mean, it was at the Golden Nugget and the Fremont, and it wasn't but a few months later, and it pretty much was gone, and that's when I started playing at the Dunes. Natalie took me to the Dunes where they had a six-card stud game, and I played that for less than a year, I'd say, and then that was gone, and it was seven-card stud after that, and that seventh card seemed like a million cards. It was a totally different game, but I played that for a living for 2 years before I went to work.
How did Chip Reese come into your life?
Oh, Chip Reese. Chip and Danny hit town, and that was just the buzz. All the action was at the Dunes, the high limit stuff. Some was at the Stardust, but that's all you heard. Chip and Danny. They came to town and just took it by storm. They were the big buzz. They hit town with nothing, ran it into millions in no time at all. And I met him playing at the Dunes, and he eventually asked me to play in the mixed doubles tournament a couple of years later, I suppose. And so we played in that. I called him up the night before, and of course I didn't realize he was stuck, like 80,000 playing some big game. I said, "What are you doing still up? You need to get plenty of rest for our, whatever it was, $1,000 buy-in tournament the next day. He said, oh, I'll be fresh as a daisy. We didn't do any good, but it was fun playing, and that sort of started our romance.
And now what year was that?
Approximately. Let's see, 78, yeah. Actually, our first date, he called me and he asked me if I knew how to play blackjack. Oh, yes. Well, I thought I did. You know, I knew basic strategy. Stewie owed $70,000 to some, shall we just say, unsavory characters in town. And since Chip was barred, yes, Stu Unger. I'm sorry. I just assumed that went without saying. Yes, little Stewie. God bless him. He was something. Chip couldn't play blackjack anywhere in town, so we went to Lake Tahoe and Reno to play. And we got Stewie's money back for him. And that was our first day. We stayed up for three straight days playing blackjack.
Wow. No sleep?
Mm-mm.
Now, so Stewie owed this money, and how is it that Chip felt it was Chip's responsibility to get Stewie out of debt? How did that
happen?
Well,
I'm sure Chip probably had ulterior motives. Maybe if Stewie got the money back, Chip could beat him out of it playing poker. Or as it turned out, Chip taught Stewie how to play poker. Stewie taught Chip how to play gin. Together, Chip was barred all over town, but because Stewie had been such a live one playing in the pit, he was able to get Chip and Stewie a proposition game at the Aladdin. And they wound up stuck a couple of $100,000 and wound up getting even. The casino manager lost his job over it, I'm told, because they said, we'll cut him off because they're getting close to even, and he wouldn't do it. And so, you know, they made a pretty good team. Chip teaching Stewie and Stewie teaching Chip.
And you had to teach Stewie how to shave, is that right?
Yes. When I tell you these guys were pretty much idiot savants, it's true. Stewie didn't know how to shave. He would go, the reason his hair would get so greasy sometimes is he didn't know how to blow it dry, and he had naturally curly hair that he didn't like. So if his girl that did his hair at the Dunes beauty salon was not in, he just let it go dirty. And a big group of them, all world-class players, at whatever they did, pool, gin, poker, they were all at Stewie's new house, and they called me up, and they couldn't figure out how to get the dishwasher open. Then they couldn't figure out something else. So I knew that was my cue to go feed them. They knew if they learned how to do something, they might sometime have to do it. So they just never learned.
All right.
Now, also, when you started dating Chip, he was still living with Danny Robeson. And
yes.
You were telling me that they didn't believe in going out for anything. They had taxi cabs bring them whatever they wanted.
Oh, yes. Whittlesea Blue Cab. Had standing orders. They could go anywhere, anytime, get them anything they wanted. And they did. Danny would frequently call. Now, Chip and Danny had a mutual bankroll. I mean, everything just came out of, you know, the one pot, even if it was Danny paying for a hooker or giving the cab driver $5,000 to go get a mink coat or a fox jacket at the Dunes. Go to the Dunes, have them open up the fur shop late at night and bring a fur coat back. So, yeah, Danny was known to do that. One time Danny called Whittlesea and asked them to please send a young hip driver because Danny needed him to pick out some glasses for him. He also
this is just kind of mind-boggling to me. So he would call the cab, tell the cab, go pick out some glasses, and then how much would he give the cab driver for doing this?
Oh, I'm sure $100 or $200. You know, they always tip very well. Every week, apparently Danny had gone to a wedding and liked the cake. So once a week, Danny would have a cab driver go to pick up a wedding cake for him. One time they said, well, they only have one cake and it's a cancellation and it has names on it. Danny's like, well, that's okay. I'm just going to eat it. It's okay. He didn't realize you could just buy white cake. He thought it specifically had to be wedding cake. So, yeah, it was a crazy, crazy time when Chip and I moved in together because Danny just got too involved in drugs. You know, they'd say, okay, call the cab, and I just thought that was ridiculous. I said, that's silly to spend that kind of money. I'll go get it. And they looked at each other and started laughing. They said, she'll learn. And eventually I did. It didn't matter. So why bust my butt driving all over town? There was just always plenty of money.
Yeah, when I interviewed Chip for my book, that was what he said, that they just had no respect for money because it seemed so easy to make that, no matter how much they spent, they just felt like they could just go make a pile more.
And they did.
I guess if you're Chip Reese, you can just go make a pile more.
Yeah, he would get to where we split up, but we stayed friends for many, many years and still travel together. I went with him to his class reunion at Dartmouth after we split up, and people just have a fascination with gambling and poker. I mean, here we are at Dartmouth, and all these doctors and lawyers and politicians, and they're all huddled around Chip. I mean, they were just all fascinated by him.
Sure.
Now, Danny had the reputation when he was playing poker for talking, hustling, trying to get the other players to go for this, go for that. And a lot of times it worked. Do you remember any stories along those lines?
Danny didn't have a mean bone in his body. Some of the players would get so upset by his chattering because they knew he would just embarrass them to death. He would say, how can you call here? How could I possibly be bluffing? But hey, you know what? I'm going to show you if I am bluffing, and aren't you going to feel silly? So they would. One game they played was mum poker. First one that talked had to throw a $100 chip in the pot. Well, Danny got rolled up instead one day. That $100 went in the pot faster than he could even raise. So, yeah, he just had a gift of gab, and everybody loved playing with him. They just loved it. When he came to California and players there, open poker rather than draw poker had just become legal, and stud was legal at the bike. And so Danny got it approved that they could split pots, as long as no one was raised out of the pot and there was no collusion going on. And those players thought that was so great. I said, oh, no, these poor little innocent stud players have no idea what he's going to do to them. He wouldn't split if he had the nuts, and he somehow managed to get half the pot if he was totally drawn dead. I mean, they just had no idea what he was going to do to them. But he was great fun.
Now, you were playing poker pretty high yourself, right, back in those days?
Well, I wasn't playing high until I met Chip. I had played small limit, and then when I turned 21, I went to dealing at Silver City just to see if I could. And I dealt for about a year and then just went back to playing. We got paid on the clock whether we played or dealt. And then when Chip took over the Dunes Poker Room, he asked me he would put up the money if I would come and play, say, $5 and $10 stud, which was big for me at that time, because he needed to hold games together and start games. So I did. He said I was the only one that ever gave him any winning money. I'm sure people just robbed him blind. But anyway, so that's how that, and then him asking me to go play blackjack was the start of our romance.
Right, but did your own play get up to the higher levels?
When I was with Chip, yes. I mean, he had me playing higher and higher limits, and, of course, I learned a lot being with him and asking questions, and he would come up behind me and watch me play, and he'd try to make me show him his hole card, my hole cards. And I never would. I said, if you're so smart, figure it out yourself. I just didn't want him watching. But, yeah, I eventually was playing really high limits. 8 and 1600 stud, I played quite regularly. Mostly back then, there were big games not that often during tournament time, but a lot of times there weren't games big enough for these guys to play to keep their interest. Larry Flint would come to town, and I'd play in his 8 and 1600 game. Chip got up to use the restroom one day playing 1 and 2000. I said, let me play a hand. I said, just so I can say that I played that. So I did play a few hands of 1 and 2000, but that was pretty much it.
Well, were there any other women that were really trying to make a living playing poker back then?
Well, yeah, back in when I first got there, there weren't too many in the early 70s, later 70s, early 80s. Then, Sissy Russo was playing Hold'em, not huge, maybe 30, 60-ish. But then Jackie Jean and Cindy Violet came along, and they were playing high limits. I remember one game at the Nugget. I think it was a 2 and 400 game, maybe a 3 and 600 game. And I was like 25 years old, 26 maybe. And I looked around, and I was the oldest one in the game. I mean, that was crazy. It was Cindy, Jackie, myself, Johnny Chan, David Gray. I think it doesn't sound like a very good game, does it? That's how we played
doesn't.
Back then.
One By or the two, way, we tore it out there was no limit. There was no limit games in Vegas back then. Everything was limit.
Correct. Well, they wouldn't allow no limit except during tournaments because it busted everybody. All the good players wound up with the money. And then they had nobody to come in and play in the poker room every day, along with Raz. To this day, they don't allow Raz except in a mixed game for the most part. I mean, this is what I've heard. I'm kind of far removed from that right now, but because the Raz players were so mean. I mean, they were just vicious. Chip locked the game up one day at the Dunes because the players were so bad, and one of them was one of the owners of the Dunes. He said, when little boys can learn to act like gentlemen, I'll open the game back up. So they sat in the back, and about every 20 minutes they'd yell, what about now, Chip? No, you haven't learned your lesson yet. So they don't allow Raz. And Chip explained that to me. He said, you know, in stud, a deuce might help your hand. But in Raz, you cannot possibly disguise that big fat king. And it made sense, you know. So Raz is pretty much long and gone.
Huh.
And for our non-poker players, Raz is 7-card stud low ball.
7-card stud low, yes. Just the 5 best low cards win.
All right.
So you might, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you might start off with 1, 2, 3, 4, king, king, queen, and just make nothing, and they would just get very upset by that.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Back in the 70s when you were playing, there were mobsters still in town. The Palazzo brothers, the Chagra brothers, a bunch of others. Was playing poker against those guys any different than playing other people?
Well, Chagra played no limit, so I wasn't with Chip at the time. He was just starting out in Vegas. So I didn't really know him that well. Chip played golf with he and his brother, Lee, the attorney, and Chip was in charge of settling up after golf, and he went to their safe deposit box at Caesar's Palace. It was a walk-in room full of money. He said he's never seen anything like it. But as far as playing poker, the Spilatros, we didn't know who they were. I was dealing at Silver City, and these guys, his brothers would come in and play poker, and they were nice guys and hung out with us and played every day. Tony would come in and sit behind Ken Bundy, one of the old school guys, and you know, they were there playing poker and nice enough guys, and then somebody said, yeah, they're big mobsters from Chicago, and we all just cracked up laughing. We couldn't believe it. We said, there's no way. Well, sure enough, they were right. So as far as playing against them, I really didn't play much against them. his brother Vince James once told me, he's like, Terry, if anybody gives you any trouble, you just let me know. Of course, I didn't know who he was. I'm like, okay. He said, no, really, I can take care of it. I said, okay, thanks. Yeah, I guess he could have taken care of it. But, yeah, it got pretty bad with Tony, you know, toward the end before he got blackballed all over town and couldn't go in the casinos. And he would call the house every day for Chip. And, of course, I screened all Chip's calls, so he was never home. But
well, when Chip had the Dunes poker room, didn't Splatro have a piece of that or something? Or did he just muscle his way into it?
No, he didn't have a piece of it. He would try to get money from Chip and Danny just for playing, you know. And Danny, which I didn't know, Danny would meet Tony at a church or wherever and pay him off. By now, Chip and Danny had broken their partnership, but... And Chip just put his foot down and wasn't going to pay him anymore. So it got kind of ugly.
How did that get resolved?
Well, Tony got blackballed all over town, and then eventually he wound up in a field. But I don't know. I think by then he just wasn't allowed in any of the casinos, so he really didn't have that great a way to get hold of Chip, you know. I mean, he could have if he had tried, but.
Yeah.
Puggy Pearson, colorful guy.
Pugster.
He's an excellent player, couldn't stand to lose, so story goes he cheated, especially at golf. Now, I don't know if you ever went out on the golf course with the guys, but you surely have heard a lot of these stories.
Well, Doyle bought a house on the country club, and then we bought one down the street, and then they weren't duplexes, but they were two-in-ones. Billy Walters bought the house next door to us. Well, they actually got a golf cart with a souped-up engine so they could keep up with Pucky on the golf course, and then they would have a guy driving to just bird dog Puggy so he couldn't get out of their sight. So, yeah, Puggy stories are famous, and I'm sure they're all true. He a great story about Puggy, I remember, he was so abusive to a dealer at the Dunes, and she got up and came around the table and grabbed his $100 chips and heaved them at the keno board. And Puggy looked at Johnny Moss. He said, what are you going to do about that, John? And Johnny said, well, I don't know, but if it was me, I'd smack her. So Puggy jumped up. Johnny was old school Texan. Puggy jumped up. The dealer, Pete Spotty, tackled Puggy. And this little Korean dealer that threw his chips came around, got him in a headlock, and was beating him on the head with her high heel. Well, I was walking with Puggy in Tahoe, going to eat, and we passed this little dealer, Kim. Puggy stopped, he looked at her, and he bowed, and he said, hello, Miss Kim.
Sounds Puggy like the said, man learned his lesson.
Well, Puggy said, thank God security showed up. I haven't won a fight yet in these places.
You know, I heard a story about him getting so mad at a dealer that he pissed on the dealer's leg under the table.
Well, I don't know for sure that was Puggy. I know things like that happened a lot. I know a dealer.
I can't imagine that happening in a poker room today.
Oh, no, but it happened back then, and I know a dealer, and a guy reached over and bit off part of his ear.
Jesus.
True story. I know the guy. And then another guy was at the shooting dice at the Dunes and peeing on the table. And they said, well, what's he doing? They said he stuck about $100,000. They said, let him pee.
Yeah, the town was a much more interesting place back then.
Well, vile but interesting, yes, that's for sure.
So now you had a story about Puggy, I'm sorry, I think it was Doyle and Chip and Billy Baxter playing gin rummy at the country club.
Yes. Oh, this was classic. Of course, we didn't have cell phones back then, but we lived on the country club. Every night they were playing some kind of three-way gin. And every night about 6 o'clock, Doyle would say, well, I've got to go home. Mama's cooking. He'd be winning, and he'd go on home. So about the fifth day they're playing, Chip and Billy have Doyle buried. I mean, he's losing his butt. So Doyle pays off the little guy that locks up the country club and in the clubhouse. And Chip said, well, what's the matter? Isn't Mama cooking? Mama's out of town. Deal the cards. Well, they had him so buried, he just was sure they were cheating him. So Doyle made Chip and Billy strip down buck naked and play all night that way. Chip came home the next morning, just tears pouring out of his eyes. He said, you're not going to believe this. He said, oh, my God, he made us strip naked. And the figure was somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million, I think. Doyle was so mad at him, he didn't talk to him for months and months and months. But, you know, eventually they became great friends. But he just was sure they were cheating him somehow.
There's
naked cheating.
What?
There's reputed to be a lot more cheating back then in the poker games than there is now. Was that your experience?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and it sounds wrong to say this, but it's kind of how it was. It was cheat or be cheated. Now, I have no firsthand knowledge, but I'm sure it happened. You know, the Stardust was really notorious for it, as was the Dunes. But I know at some point in time, Doyle's daughter died, and Chip and Doyle got really involved in religion. I mean, really involved, and became born-again Christians. And that's kind of the reason we split up. I mean, it was just all-consuming, and that's great. But, you know, it's like I wasn't going to go to all these prayer study Bible groups and all this because it was a fad. And, you know, he just kind of changed. So after 5 years, it was just kind of time to move on. But the cheating, yeah, Chip and Doyle made a pact. They said, we will never do anything to anybody again, ever. And Johnny Moss laughed. He said, yeah, they done cheated everybody out of all their money. Now they want them all to get religion so they can keep their money. And I mentioned that to Chip not long before he died, actually. I said, yeah, I heard a story. Somebody said something. I said, no, I told him you and Doyle made a pact to never do anything ever. And he said, and we haven't. He said, I promise you we haven't. And I believe him. I mean, I may be naive, but I 100% believe it.
But before that,
so pact, there. Before that pact, well, I don't know. I met Chip when he took over the poker room at the Dunes. And he really didn't want to run a poker room. He just wanted to be sure they had a place to play. So that's why he took it over, and he had all his college buddies come out to work the floor because he knew he could teach them poker. You know, most of them played anyway, but he could teach them, but he knew he could trust them. But then Doyle and Eric Drake opened up the poker room at the Silver Bird, so the Dunes just kind of went by the wayside. You know, he didn't really have a whole lot going on in there. So as far as my firsthand knowledge of the cheating and things that went on, no, I don't. You know, all the action went to the Silver Bird, and then after that, I think Johnny Moss might have taken the poker room over again. I can't remember.
Yeah, he had it at the Flamingo for a while, Johnny Moss did.
Yeah, well, he had it several times at the Dunes also.
Yeah.
He put a piece of notepaper on the wall because I guess he would take heat for cuss. He says, if you cuss, cuss yourself. Because somebody would say, John, don't use that language. Well, I'm just cussing myself. He was a funny old guy. But, yeah, poor John, he was a great player, but he got old. And so you know, they'd teach him a new game, and then, you know, he's pretty smart, and he'd catch on to that game and get pretty good at it, and then they'd teach him another game. So, you know, he couldn't keep up with these young kids. Of course, Chip and Danny were the first really, you know, college kids really to hit town. You know, it's not like this group of internet guys, and back then it was just, you know, scufflers and road players. So they were a whole new breed.
Right. I think Puggy had, what, like a third grade education or something like that?
Yeah. Puggy was pretty smart. Doyle laughs. He says, I don't know how Puggy adds things up to lay insurance. He said, you know, he'll start talking, and he says it's the craziest thing, but he'll get pretty darn close. I don't know how he does it, but he does.
Huh.
But, I mean, for third grade, he was a pretty sharp guy.
Who is Nicky Vacciano, and how do you know him?
Nicky Vacciano. Nicky, I met at the Dunes when I first started playing there, and he was one of the most abusive players to the dealers. He was horrible. But later in life, he got emphysema and got really, really soft-hearted. I mean, he traveled around a lot. We'd always go vacation somewhere and rest up. Well, of course, back then there were only two big tournaments, the Horseshoe, and then Slim started having his. So there were only two tournaments a year. But we'd go rest up for a week, say in Acapulco or Hawaii or somewhere. Nicky would travel with us. But he got so soft-hearted, he would cry at Disney movies. I know people will find that hard to believe, but he did. He was
old
pool
Yeller
player.
Must have killed him.
Huh?
Old Yeller must have killed him.
Yeah. Even the movie Arthur.
Yeah.
I
knew Nicky. Yeah, he cried at the movie Arthur because the butler died.
Because the butler died. He was mad at me because I told him it was a comedy.
Yeah, I knew Nicky because when I got to Vegas in the late 70s, you know, I was backgammon player, and all of the poker players were taking up backgammon. And so Nicky was really an interesting character because he was a really good card player and pool player. But what he was really good at was hustling. So he would tell the pool players, well, look, I'm a gin rummy and a poker player. You got to give me a spot. And when he was playing cards, he would tell them, look, I'm a pool player. I don't know these games. You got to give me a spot. So Nicky always had the best of it, you know, no matter where he was. And yeah, I knew him. I knew him when I knew him, he had the emphysema so I didn't see any of the abusive stuff, but he was a really, really nice guy to me. Treated me
right.
Really well because I was really young and stupid and naive and you know, yeah, as I say.
Well,
he was
I got to Vegas at 18, and, you know, here I was literally off the farm. I mean, the first time I played poker, I had braided pigtails. We had been out riding for my friend's horses, and I met Nicky at the Dunes. You know, and here I'd come in, 18 years old, with a low-cut top on. Nicky, back then, in the little nickel ante 1-3 games, it didn't go by suit. Just the first low card, if there were three deuces on the board, the first deuce opened. So Nicky, of course, schooled me on that. He said, you always sit in the eight seat. He said, and then every time somebody gets a deuce and you get a deuce, he said, you put that 50 cents in your pocket because you were smarter than they were. And he said, now, if you have a really good hand, just bet. Don't look up, just bet. He said, if you have a mediocre hand, you know, where you know you got to call if they bet, you don't really want to, just check and look up and bat your eyes and smile. He said, and if you have a terrible hand that you have to fold if they bet, he said, just stick those big boobs out there and smile and say, I check. That was Nicky's strategy for me. As
and
I
did
played
it work?
in my, well, you know, I just couldn't quite bring myself to do it. As I got into the higher limit games, I learned these hustlers and, you know, good players. I could have danced on the table naked and they wouldn't have cared if, you know, it involved their money. They weren't even going to look up, honestly.
You know, when I first got to town, I was 22 years old, you know, quite a good backgammon player at the time. And I went to the backgammon club the first night, and I went in. It was an off night, not a tournament night. And Mike Maxiculli was there playing backgammon with Puggy Pearson. And I knew who Puggy was. I mean, I was in awe of Puggy. He was, you know, one of the guys I had read about growing up. And
a legend, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and I go in and I think I'm really hot shit and these guys look like prime meat to me, you know. And so I go up and I start watching and Max says to me, you know, are you looking for a game? And I said, yeah, I'd like to play. And he cocks his head at me and they both look at me and he goes, you're not a hustler, are you? And, you know, I look back at that, and I just have to laugh because, you know, here I was, this 22-year-old kid, you know, who really thought he was trying to pull something slick, you know. And, I mean, they saw me coming before I even got to the parking lot.
Funny. Yeah, of course I've heard your name. You know, I mean, Chip got to be – I mean – I hear he got to be a great backgammon player, and Paul McGrill said he was the best money player. Of course, by then, I'm sure you were so good you couldn't get a game with anybody.
That was right around the time. I mean, Chip did become quite a good player. He was really the only one that I'm aware of that, you know, that became really good of the old school guys. I mean, you know, later Eric Seidel and Huck Seed and all those guys came out, and they were really good backgammon players. But, you know, of the old school guys, yeah, Chip was the one who got very good. But
well, of course, then there's Jason Lester, too, but he was a backgammon player before he played poker.
Yes, yeah, he was another one that came out from New York, yeah.
Now, what you said about dancing on the table and naked and they wouldn't notice, that's the opposite of what my experience was. Although I never saw you dance on a table. You
those videos
poker.
Will never see the light of day, okay.
It was before YouTube, I guess.
Yes.
You started playing poker in Vegas about the same time I started playing backgammon in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
And one of the top woman backgammon players way back when was Lee Ganoot. And she would tell people she would intentionally go braless at tournaments and wear low-cut blouses, loose, and hope to distract the guys. And she figured if guys were thinking with their hormones, she'd have this big advantage. Now, can you say that didn't happen in the poker world, or you couldn't pull it off? Or?
Well, what I'm saying is the professional player, yeah, it would work on a lot of them, I'm sure, but would it distract you guys when you were playing backgammon? No, because you still have all the odds. You know what you're doing playing. It's like automatic. It's not going to affect your play, just like poker players, the really good ones. You know, I don't think it would have affected them. Now, some of the lesser, you know, great players, it could have worked. And I'm not saying I didn't. I wore low-cut tops back then. Just because I thought I looked good, and apparently I did. There were so few women in poker back then, and especially, you know, 18 to 21-year-old girls. Eventually, you know, I quit doing that, but, you know, I was a young girl. I didn't go to bars. I don't drink. I didn't want to go out dancing. My nightlife was going to play poker, so if I got dressed up, I mean, that's what I wore to go play poker, but it wasn't necessarily to distract. I just wanted to look good.
Now, I was playing poker, backgammon, in my late 20s, and I was a strong intermediate player. I never got to be as good as Richard, and certainly not as one of the top players. But My hormones were active when I was in the late 20s. I like looking.
But you were an intermediate player. I rest my case. That's just what I'm saying.
Touché.
There you go.
All right.
All right.
Sometimes it's better to be an intermediate, I guess. So,
exactly. And have a little more fun, maybe. Chip taught me how to play backgammon. I mean, I couldn't play with the cube. I was terrible at odds, you know. He said, that's like playing poker without being able to raise. I said, I don't care if you want to play. We're not playing with the cube. Okay. So we were sitting in the hallway. Danny had locked himself in the suite, Chip's suite at the Dunes, and he had a girl in there with him, and he was supposed to be drug-free. We sent Danny to rehab 5 times before it finally took, and I know he slipped some, but he was trying. But Chip and I sat outside playing backgammon in the hallway, and I backgammoned Chip, and he was so mad. And some little couple from, you know, Podunk, Iowa, called security. Of course, they didn't know he was a hotel executive. He looked like anything but. And so we had to go in. By then, Danny had flushed all the drugs down the toilet. And, oh, I was asleep. But anyway, yeah, I backgammon Chip. And he'd look at me and say, you just never put your finger on the wrong checker, L1. I was L1 for little one. Of course, he taught me, but I mean, if I set up the board right, I win. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I was his entertainment.
Well, if he was world class, he would have to give you a pretty big spot to make it even.
Well, we didn't spot. I mean, I just didn't play with the cube. We used everything was about food back then. You know, I was always putting him on a diet, and one day we played gin to see who would go to the store. Well, gee, who do you think's going to win there? So,
well, on one game, maybe he's an 80% advantage. If you play for many, many hours, it's closer to 100. But for one game, maybe.
Well, it wasn't just, you know, it was going to be until I had to go. Let's put it that way. Well, I dealt him. Okay, and Stewie said he had never seen it in all the years he played. I dealt Chip a pat 10-card straight flush.
Wow.
And
wow.
I looked at him, Stewie said, no. Chip said, buddy, I'm telling you, I watched her deal it. I said, you know what, I'm going to have to go to the store anyway. I don't need to put up with this nonsense. I'll just go ahead and go. So it was always about food. He would get Tommy Kress stuck at the Dunes, and Chip would call me and say, he's threatening to quit, bring the fried chicken. Well, they love my fried chicken, old Southern recipe from my great-grandmother. And I would make fried chicken and potato salad and baked beans, and off to the Dunes I'd go with my picnic basket to the poker room to keep Tommy playing.
But it takes a while to make fried chicken and potato salad and stuff.
Especially if I had to go to the store first.
Well, you couldn't go to the store unless you lost to him and gin first. So, and Freddie's already
true.
Busy.
He was. People don't realize how goofy he was. I would wake up in the night and he would be putting rubber bands on my toes to see how many he could get on there without me waking up. I'd look up and he'd have his putter as close to my nose as he could get, see how close he could get without me waking up. At one time, he thought hospital beds were great. So we got those. Well, I had to lay on the controls because I would wake up and he would be folding me up in bed. He just thought that was great fun. He just needed to be entertained at all times. People would say, God, I would be so mad. I said, well, what am I going to be mad about? It's not like I have a job. I don't have to get up and go to work. You know, just go back to sleep if I could. But it was 5 years of nothing but fun and great times.
All right. So we're going to take a brief break now. We're talking to Terry King. coming back. There's this great houseboat story that she's going to tell us about. And we're also going to ask about her winning a World Series of Poker bracelet. So we'll be right back to that. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In August, all the promotions will be for those who already get mailers. Next week's free video poker class, Wednesday, August 31st, is 9-6 Jacks or Better Multi-Strike. Multi-Strike is a four lines game where you pay for all four lines up front, and then you play only the bottom line. If you get at least your money back, then you get to move up to the second line where all payouts are doubled. If you win on the bottom two lines, you get to go up to the next one where all payouts are multiplied by four, and the top line, all payouts are multiplied by eight. There is a different strategy for each of the four lines because the more higher benefits are still possible, the more you go for any win as opposed to the top win. So the game returns a tick under 99.8. So with the slot club of 0.3, it's positive 24/7, even before you include promotions, even before you include the mailers. At the Palms, from now until the end of August, they have drawings every Saturday night, 7:15. 10 winners share $10,000 each night, every day, but Monday through Friday. You can swipe to receive 20 free drawing tickets. PFP, play for prizes. Until tomorrow, August 26th, you earn Macy's gift cards. Prizes are redeemed at a rate of 0.2%, up to $190 per day. You keep the points. Starting Monday, for the last week in August, you get mystery multipliers every day in lieu of the PFP, play for prizes. Video poker players get at least 2x or sometimes 3x. You're limited to 80,000 bonus points, which means if you get a 2x multiplier, you can play 80,000 points and get them all doubled. If you get a 3x multiplier, you can play 40,000 points and get them tripled. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold Membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the game. All right, we've been talking to Terry King about playing poker and living with poker degenerates in the good old days. So, Terry, there's a story about a houseboat. What's that one all about?
Oh, goodness. Well, like I said before, there wasn't always a game big enough through the year to hold these guys' interest. So in the meantime, we would try to do things. Poker players, well, now it's a different day and age, but back then these guys didn't like to go out and do stuff. If it didn't involve gambling or if you couldn't bet on something, but I said, Chip, let's go out to Lake Mead. He said, oh, you want to buy a boat? I said, no, I just want to go rent a boat, a little speedboat, and zip around the lake. It's a nice day. So we went out there, zipped around the lake. He said, oh, this was fun. Let's buy a boat. So as soon as we got home, he called Bill Walters, our next-door neighbor, and Billy said, no, here's what you got to do. You got to get a houseboat. I'll go in partners with you. Walter Centula also went in partners. He says, you got to go in, get a houseboat, and get Puggy out there on the boat, beat him out of the money playing backgammon, it'll pay for the boat. So we got this big, I mean, I don't know, I have pictures of it. It was a two-bedroom, living room, full kitchen houseboat that we got. And I don't even know if they had a chance to get Puggy out there on it. It sank in a tornado. It sank in the deepest part of the lake, the only tornado to ever hit Lake Mead back then. And, of course, they didn't have insurance. They booked their own. So all I said was I want to go to the lake.
And they already had enough that they didn't want to buy it. If it was a good idea before, they could always buy another houseboat.
Well, I think they did eventually pull it up for scrap, but, you know, they didn't get much out of it. I don't know about that time Chip and I split up, so I guess he figured, okay, I didn't want to go to the lake anymore, and they didn't know if they could get Puggy out there on it enough, so no, they did not get another boat.
You earned a World Series of Poker bracelet in a ladies-only event back in 78. Apparently, and congratulations, but apparently it almost didn't happen. What happened?
Well, I mean, it was going to happen. I was going to enter anyway. I had given my husband at the time, Larry, the $200 to go sign me up. I was working, dealing at Silver City, and I said, you know, sign me up so I don't have to get up early and do that. Well, he blew the $200. So he borrowed $100 from Peter Casella, Jimmy Casella, maybe the only guy that was more abusive than Nicky Vach. Peter Casella's son lent Larry $100, and he sold 25% of me to Chip and Danny, and he sold 25% of me to Vince James, who was Tony Spilotro's brother. Well, it came down to Starla Brody and myself. Now, Starla was, she was only about 22 or 3, but she had been playing pretty high limit already. I hadn't played high limit. And she was going to eat me up playing heads up. But Danny, having a piece of me, he called me to the side. He said, listen, Starla's boyfriend's a good friend of mine, so you can't tell this, but he says, I'm going to give you some tips that will, and for sure you'll beat her. So he gave me a couple of tips, and I wound up beating her. But without his advice, 100% I know I would not have beaten her. So somebody asked me what those tips were. I said, no, those are a few I'll take to the grave with me. I have a few of those. Go ahead.
Is Starla still alive?
No, sadly, Starla passed away about 2 years ago. We had planned an old gals trip. Starla, Jackie Jean, myself, we were going to meet up with Cindy Violet, Jane Drake, Lavelle, and stay at Kat's house, my friend Kathy Hulbert, who's a friend of Richard's. And
she's on the show.
Yes. And Starla sadly passed away before the trip, and Jackie Jean couldn't make the trip. So it wound up just being a few of... We were actually going to work on a book, and my friend Natalie, the one that started me out, you know, playing poker well, she came, and we were all going to work on a book, and it didn't happen, but we are still... I just want to put out some of these funny stories because I know people just can't fathom how crazy it was back then.
So everybody Everybody involved in that 1978 Ladies Only event is dead except you. So why can't you share Danny's stories hints now? Because nobody involved is alive anymore.
Because I said I wouldn't.
That's good enough. Okay. I have no answer to that. Richard, your turn.
I wanted to ask about the story about another naked Chip story. about something about him being naked in the hallway.
Oh, gosh. We were in Tahoe, Reno, I guess, and Chip wasn't a drinker, but he had had a little bit to drink, and, of course, we had this giant food tray, and he was a little tipsy, and his buck neck, he's like, oh, this food smells, let's get it out of the room. I said, Chip, he said, just hold the door open, and he gets this huge tray, and as he's setting it in the hall, the door slams shut.
And he was naked.
He was naked. And Of course, that was a story we swore not to tell. I told Bobby Baldwin, and, of course, he giggled and said, oh, no, I won't tell anybody. But I said, well, I'm just in this little silk robe. He goes, yeah, I'd like to have just that little silk robe about now. So he's scrunched up in the corner, and we can hear the elevator coming. And I'm pounding on the door next door. Chip and or Chip's sister Nancy and Stewie were in there eating. And they're like, no, we don't want any. I said, Nancy, open the door. And she could hear the panic in my voice, and they pissed. But, yeah, he got locked out then, naked. And then another story, he took my car. Stewie had bought a house, big old house, had no furniture. So Chip took my car. It was a Mercedes with a big trunk. So he took the patio table over to Stewie's house to play gin. In his pajamas, of course. And my car broke down right at the everything was in their pajamas. So the car broke down right in the intersection of Flamingo and Eastern. Just completely dead. So he ran home trying to hide in bushes in bright red silk pajamas. He said, get rid of that car today. And I did. So, yeah, he seemed to get locked out in PJs or naked a lot. He actually, I mean, they loved their pajamas and bathrobes so much that when he died, his kids buried him in the bathrobe.
Oh, that's funny.
That is funny.
Because that was just so him.
We've been talking about you being a poker player, but you were actually a poker dealer and ran poker tournaments for a lot more years than you were a player. Is that correct?
Well, on and off. I mean, I'd say maybe, probably worked more now, as I get. Since Stud went away, I just hardly play at all. I played with Chip, and then when we split up, I went to California, worked a little, back to Vegas. I played high limits on my own for a while, but I just got tired of the ups and downs and moved to California and went to work at the Bicycle Club. And then I went to work at Hollywood Park, and, hey, shout out to them for their new facility there. A lot of those employees have been there since they opened in 94, so I'm glad that's going to revitalize their work for them. And I ran a shift. I was a shift manager at Hollywood Park for 5 years on swing shift, and that was an adventure in the hood back then. It's nicer now, but.
You were also, I believe you were the first woman to ever deal at the World Series. Is that right?
The 10,000 event. My friend Jackie
Simon. Yeah,
that's the
main event. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the year I won the stud tournament when it was heads up. Eric Drake walked by and he said, are you still going to deal if you win this? I said, well, of course. So Jackie Simon and I were the first two women ever asked to deal the 10,000 event. No, we didn't deal the final table, but we did deal the event. So, yeah.
So there was still a stigma against women dealers at that time?
I don't know that it was a stigma as much as there just weren't that many around. I mean, I guess there were some dealers then. I don't know, maybe they didn't think they were qualified to deal, you know, the big one. I don't know. But obviously, you know, there's probably as many women as there are men now. But back then, there just weren't that many.
Very good. Thank you very much, Terry King. This has been a delightful hour of Back Through Memory Row. We thank you very, very much for coming on Gambling with an Edge.
Well, I thank you very much, and hopefully I'll get this book out one day and you can read more and more of these crazy stories.
Well, then you're going to
and if you do, we'll have you back on the show to talk about it.
Oh, great. That would be wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm so flattered you asked me.
All right. Richard, how can people get in touch with us?
Well, first of all, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or our Facebook page, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can sign up to get the show delivered to you automatically every week. You can do that at gamblingwithanedge.com or iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. And to find an archive of every episode we ever have done, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
All right. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
Thank you.